day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, the program dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, secret societies, and the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. The Guardians of the Holy Grail was created by me to clear up many of the popular misconceptions regarding the secret societies, the Holy Grail mysteries, and the bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Through this show, I hope to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Knights Templar, Freemasonry, and other initiatic societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templars that over the centuries has been either lost or ignored. You can learn more about our Gnostic Templar organization and sign our mailing list by visiting our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org. While you're there, you can also sign up for our 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course, and you can become an associate member of our organization. Besides reviving the lost Templar knowledge, our long-term goals of our organization include educating the world about the primal Gnostic alchemical path, which is the essence of all religions and essentially unites them all as one. It's really been this path that the secret societies have been seeking to replace religious dogma around the world for hundreds of years. And eventually they hope to make this a one-world spirituality. Now, today's show, if you would like to call in with questions for our guests, please use our toll-free number at 866-472-5795. Today's show is going to be a little different than what you're used to. We're kind of moving in a different direction. Today we're going to be discussing extraterrestrials and their influence on our spiritual evolution and possibly their connection to the secret societies and ascended masters. Our guest is a member of the Aetherius Society, which is an international spiritual organization founded by Dr. George King in the 1950s to assist ET and ascended masters in bringing harmony and peace to our planet. George King was a British man who evolved himself through the practices of yoga so that he could communicate with extraterrestrials and was then chosen by them to be their primary terrestrial mental channel here on Earth. Our guest today is Mark Bennett, a man who currently works full-time for the Aetherius Society. Mark is the co-author of two books entitled Prayer Energy and God's Guides and Guardian Angels. This latter book was voted Best Book on Spirituality 2007 by the readers of Kindred Spirit magazine. If you'd like to know more about Mark, you can visit his website, which is www.markinfo.co.uk. So greetings, Mark. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Hi, Mark. Great to be here.
Well, as I said, this is an exciting change for us all to be talking about extraterrestrials, and So it's definitely going to be very interesting. So let's start off with how long have you been associated with the Etheria Society, and what was your initial motivation for getting involved with the organization?
Well, that's a good question. I became a full member of the Etheria Society about 11 years ago when I was 18, and I'd known about it for a few years before that. I first came across it through watching a television program about the planet Venus. It was quite a long, difficult journey from discovering the Etheria Society to becoming convinced that this was the path for me, and that these very, very extraordinary claims that the Society was making were in fact true. And the way that I came to this conclusion was largely through putting into practice what the Society was saying, putting into practice the message of the extraterrestrial beings, or cosmic masters as we call them, who spoke through Dr. King. And ever since I've done that, I've been increasingly amazed at the proof that one can get in one's daily life on an intuitive level, sometimes on other levels too, that these amazing things, these wonderful truths, are indeed true.
Well, how big is your organization currently, and where exactly are its members located right now?
Well, we're a worldwide organization, and we have branches and groups all over the world, and also members scattered about individually as well. We have two headquarters. One is in London, in England, where the Society started, and the other is in Los Angeles, in California. And anyone who's interested in finding out more about the Etheria Society is welcome to contact the Los Angeles headquarters. And I'll give out the phone number, if I may, Mark.
Certainly, yes.
It's 800-800-1354. And there's a team of people there who'd be very happy to go into more depth about some of the things that I hope we'll be talking about tonight.
Can anybody become a member?
Anyone can apply to become a member, and most people who do apply to become members are accepted, but it's not an automatic thing. We like to make sure that our members really understand what the organization is about before they join. So we have an informed and dedicated membership who live the teachings in their hearts and throughout their lives.
Is there a current head to the organization?
There's no single person, no, because Dr. George King, who founded the organization, was such a unique individual that no one is fit to replace him. He was an extraordinary man and an extraordinary master, and now the Society is run by various different bodies. The main governing body in terms of daily administration is an international board of directors, which operates from both London and from Los Angeles.
So George King didn't anoint anyone his successor before he left, huh?
He didn't, no. He did give many initiations to many people of various grades, and one of the most significant initiations he gave was that of being a bishop within the ecclesiastical part of the Etheria Society, and he personally consecrated two individuals as bishops within the organization. So his power, you know, will carry on through the ecclesiastical line and in other ways too. But as I say, there was no one who was fit to take his place or even begin to take his place. And even those two bishops, wonderful people though they are, wouldn't begin to claim to be on anything like the level that he was.
Well, so you have bishops. Do you have some kind of a hierarchy in the organization?
Yes, we are unashamed and proud to be hierarchical. We have various degrees of hierarchy. We have bishops, we have priests, ministers, assistant ministers. We also have a system of robe initiation where members of various degrees of dedication and time within the organization have initiations which are represented by different colors of robe.
We also have other
forms of initiation as well. It's really quite an intricate thing.
How many levels do you have, and if someone wanted to work their way through the levels, how long would it take them?
That's a very good question. I mean, I think it would depend on the individual, but it would take a long time. Let's just put it like that. It would take, I think, almost certainly decades to get to the highest initiatory levels of the society.
Well, it sounds like it has a Christian emphasis to it?
It depends what aspect it is. We believe that the great teachers, the great avatars of the past, such as the Master Jesus and the Lord Buddha and Sri Krishna, were actually from other planets, and that they chose to be born here under limitation in order to perform certain functions, one of which would have been spreading wisdom. So we embrace many faiths, and that is reflected in the way the society is structured today. For example, as I've mentioned, we have bishops and priests, which sounds like a Christian thing, but in those services conducted by such people, we will also chant mantra, which is associated with Hinduism or with Buddhism. So to the newcomer, they would see a mix of different things in play.
Well, that makes sense. I understand from reading George King's biography that at some point he had a very unusual experience that he was visited by a yoga master who, I guess, popped into his living room and then taught him some teachings. Is that right?
Yes, it's not quite how I'd put it, but yes, that's the long and short of it. He, after the war, the Second World War, during which he'd been a conscientious objector, but a very active member of the fire service in London, which was very dangerous work, of course, after the war, he devoted himself to the practice of yoga, which you've mentioned. Yoga, of course, being much more than just physical exercises, great though those may be. He managed through yoga practice, through studying and living yoga philosophy, to enter deep meditative states and develop great psychic ability, which he then controlled and transmuted where necessary. Then after having done this for an average of 8 to 10 hours a day for about 10 years, as well as doing a full-time job and living in London, he was drying up dishes one day, one sunny Saturday morning, in his flat in Maida Vale in London, and he heard a voice outside of himself which said, "You are to become the voice of Interplanetary Parliament." Now that would shock anyone if they were to hear such a voice, and it even shocked him, because despite the fact that he was a great medium by this time, he was able to communicate with beings, with intelligences on other realms, he did not understand exactly what this meant or where exactly it had come from. It really caused him some soul-searching, for want of a better term. And during this process, a few days after he'd heard this voice, a swami, we're not told the identity, but we're told that it was a great swami of world renown who was alive at that time in the Himalayas, walked through his closed door. He didn't open the door, he didn't crush the door or damage it in any way. He managed, through his psychic ability, to somehow walk through a closed door. He then walked across the floor of Dr. King's living room, and the floorboards actually creaked under his weight. So that shows that he wasn't just a hologram or even an astral projection. He was actually physically there in some way. And he then gave Dr. King some advice on what had happened, and this included some yogic instruction. And one of the things he told him, without being asked, so to speak, was that it wasn't for Dr. King to choose, to decide whether or not he was worthy. And actually, this master was picking up on Dr. King's, one of Dr. King's worries at that time, which was, how could I deserve this? Because although he didn't know what it was exactly, he knew that it must be very important.
So would you say that the Swami showed up to transform George King, that so that he could be the vehicle for this interplanetary council?
I don't think he exactly transformed him, no. I think he just gave him, on a high level, gave him the counsel and teaching that he needed at that time to smooth the progression from what Dr. King had been focusing on.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is, was the Swami kind of working in tandem with this extraterrestrial council in order to...
We must presume that he was, or he wouldn't have known about the event, or certainly wouldn't have known, you know, how to give Dr. King advice about it. So, in fact, Dr. King has actually said that the Swami in question was from the planet Venus. So the Swami himself was an avatar from another world who had chosen to be born under the great limitation of being a terrestrial, to live and work among us in order to help us. So, yes, I think he must definitely have had some knowledge. The interesting question is how much knowledge he did have of the full picture, because although he was an avatar from another world, he was, as I say, born in limitation among us. And when an avatar comes to Earth, although they stand head and shoulders above an ordinary Earth person, they do not have access to full knowledge of the workings of Interplanetary Parliament.
So it sounds like that you've been able to make one-to-one correlations between these high swamis, these avatars, these ascended masters with certain planets, that somehow George King has that knowledge of their origins on different planets.
Yes, I'm not sure exactly how the knowledge came to him. It may have come to him through meditation, or he may have been told it by beings from other worlds, because following the event that I've described, when he was told that he was to become the voice of Interplanetary Parliament, which is an event that we call a command, following this, he became a medium not just for the deceased on Earth, like most mediums are, but he actually became a medium for these beings on other planets. And particularly in the early days, the way he used to do this often was to enter a very deep state of positive yogic trance, where a mental beam would be sent to him by a particular intelligence or more than one intelligence, and his mind would translate that into language. And him being an Englishman, an English speaker, it came out in English, and the words were said using his voice. So when you hear what we call a cosmic transmission, when one of these beings is speaking through him, you can detect a slight flavor of George King's voice, his accent, in that. But at the same time, each communicator is quite different. For example, the Master Jesus, who we believe is an avatar from Venus, when he has spoken through Dr. King, you have a very gentle quality. It's strong, it's uncompromising, definite, but there's a wonderful love and gentleness that comes through the intonation. Whereas when another great being, who is called Mars Sector 6, speaks through Dr. King, although there is still tremendous compassion, it is a much more forceful, much more powerful, awe-inspiring kind of a tone.
Okay. Well, tell me about this interplanetary council. Is this a council that meets on some dimension or some planet every so often? Or?
Well, that's a good question, and I can only tell you a little because I only know a little. But in brief, interplanetary parliament. By the way, parliament is not a particularly good word for it. It's just that we don't have an adequate word in the English language to describe it. It certainly isn't a parliament in the way that, you know, the British Parliament is a parliament. It's a much higher thing than that. This parliament is based upon the planet Saturn, which is the highest planet in terms of spiritual development in this solar system. And when you ask about is it on another dimension, I wouldn't necessarily use the word dimension, but it is on a higher frequency of vibration. It is on another level of existence. We believe that there is life on most of the planets, intelligent, very spiritual life on most of the planets in this system. But that's not to say that if we were to go there, fly there in a spacecraft, that we would find it, because it's on a higher level, just as there are life forms on this Earth which exist on a higher frequency of vibration.
Well, are there members? Are there members in your organization that are in touch with this interplanetary council?
No, there are not. Within the organization, the only person who has ever had contact with these beings is Dr. George King, contact of that nature. It's a very difficult thing to do. You have to be of a very high level of personal spiritual development before you are able to have that level of contact with these beings.
Well, when they were communicating through George King, what was the essence of the messages that they, you know, were moving through him?
The essence of the messages was that we on Earth need to pull ourselves together and stop behaving in the foolish manner that we are, particularly relating to atomic warfare and experimentation, that we need to turn back to the essence of all the great religions. They're not exclusive. They're not saying that you must only be a member of the Aetherius Society or you're damned. It's not like that at all. You can pick your path, but you should follow it as it was given. And you should follow it with all your heart and all your soul. The messages are very uncompromising. There is only one thing in life that is important, and that is spirituality. Anything else, if it is important, is only important because of its spiritual value. We should all, upon earth, devote ourselves in service to others. And this is the essence of the New Age. In days gone by, there was a valid yogic path of retreating from the world, perhaps climbing a mountain, living in a cave, practicing yoga in solitude, gaining high degrees of mental, psychic, and spiritual awareness. And then after lives, literally life upon life, reincarnating upon earth of doing this, then and only then, coming forwards in service to help people. But the message now is that even very ordinary people, such as the members within the Aetherius Society, and we don't claim to be anything other than ordinary people, that we can be of great service. Now, anyone can be of service, whether you believe in God or not. You could have an atheist who is a wonderful humanitarian who goes off and saves lives, helps the poor, or what have you. What is unique about the Aetherius Society, we believe, is that even now, although we don't have two-way communication with these extraterrestrial beings, we do cooperate directly with them. For example, four times a year that we know of, a satellite, a Martian satellite, comes into orbit of Earth, which sends a certain type of energy to people on Earth if they are going to use it correctly. Now, what this means is that anyone on Earth during these periods, these four periods, who performs any selfless act, whether they believe in God or not, whether they believe in Martian satellites or not, is irrelevant. If they perform an unselfish act during this time, the energy from this craft will potentize the spiritual value of that act by a factor of 3,000, which means that the karmic value to Earth as a whole is increased by a factor of 3,000.
Can you tell us?
We know the dates.
We
know the dates. There are four periods a year. They're on our website, which is www.aetherius.org, and Aetherius is spelled A E T for Tommy, H E R I U S for sugar. During the first and last hour of these periods, people in the Aetherius Society get together. And we chant mantra, we do visualizations, we send out spiritual energy both to offer thanks to the great beings on this satellite and also to send energy out to the world. And as we do this, our actions are karmically potentized by a factor of 3,000. And although this is it's true that anyone can take part in a spiritual push, as we call them, that's what these periods are called, can take part in a spiritual push in this way, and it'll work whether you believe in it or not, the fact that we are doing it consciously, that we are directly cooperating with them, knowing that they've come into orbit, this makes the whole thing all the more spiritually powerful. There are other things that we do. For example, we have five pieces of spiritual apparatus called spiritual energy radiators, which are specially designed machines designed by Dr. King, which when activated act as a channel for certain spiritual energies from other worlds. So for example, in the recent, there have been so many crises recently, but take one of the worst, for example, Haiti. Thousands and thousands of hours of spiritual energy, potent spiritual energy, has gone through various of these machines outwards to help relieve suffering for the Haiti situation. And this is by virtue of the fact that the society cooperates with extraterrestrial beings. If the extraterrestrial beings were not willing for us to cooperate with them in this way, the machinery would not function in the way that it does.
Is there some way to get a hold of one of these machines?
No, they are unique to the Aetherius Society.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you been able to identify any specific extraterrestrial races that are more actively working with humans right now?
Yes. We believe that the beings within this, the evolved beings I mentioned earlier, within this solar system, I don't know exactly which planets, but we believe that they are very active in helping us at this time. I've mentioned Mars already. During Dr. King's lifetime, most of the transmissions, cosmic transmissions given through him, came from beings from Venus and Mars, and occasionally from Jupiter and Saturn, and very occasionally from elsewhere. Interestingly, there is another race of beings from a planetary system which we call Gotha, which is about 35 million light years away from this Earth. And they cooperate. They are also very spiritually advanced. And they cooperate with us, or I should say we cooperate with them, in one of the most spiritual activities which is performed on Earth today, which is called Operation Sunbeam. And in brief, Operation Sunbeam, using different apparatus, is a way of human beings upon Earth participating in the great noble act of energy being given back to the Mother Earth. We live on Earth. The Earth is a living goddess who most of us, if not all of us, take for granted, to some degree at least. Many of the so-called, wrongly called, primitive tribes upon Earth have honored the Earth, and this is a great thing. But now, with Operation Sunbeam, for the first time, certainly in modern history, by which I mean the past few thousand years, human beings are able to participate in actually facilitating energy going from a high source, namely the Masters from Gotha, through this apparatus to the goddess herself. It's not just done in honor of her, the energy actually goes to the Earth herself. Now, if we, basic and lowly as we are, tried to invoke spiritual energy and send it to the Logos, A, we would not be able to do so. B, if we did do so, although it might be spiritual to us, this energy, it would not be of a sufficient caliber to actually help the Earth.
Well, has there been any communication, any contact you've been able to make with, I'm thinking specifically the Syrians, because according to some traditions, it was the Syrians that have been behind much of the secret society activity for many years. In fact, they were even the founders, to some degree, of Freemasonry itself. So, you know, has there been any contact with them that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of, relating to the Aetherius Society, no. I have heard many interesting theories and stories regarding the Syrians, and I certainly wouldn't rule it out. There's no reason that I know of why it should not be possible, but I couldn't... It's not part of our teaching, so I couldn't authenticate it, as it were.
Well, so if I wanted to, if my goal was to open myself up so I could establish a connecting link, a communication with extraterrestrials, is this something that I would be able to evolve into by practicing the different techniques in your organization?
Yes, it is, but it would probably, I mean, I don't know your karmic pattern or your state of evolution, but it would probably take you many, many lives, many, many incarnations.
Okay, I'm not trying to dodge
your question, but the idea of a two-way communication with advanced extraterrestrial beings this is not something which can be precipitated by most people. My own personal belief is that even if I were to be everything that I should be, which I'm not, and do everything that I should do and practice all of our practices with all my heart and all my soul, and generally be a better person, even if I did all that, I don't believe that in this life that I would be capable of having the kind of communication that Dr. King had. In fact, there's a very interesting statement that Dr. King made in relation to, I believe it was a series of transmissions called The 12 Blessings, which is now in book form. It's a wonderful book, a wonderful practice, and you can find out more about that from our website and also purchase copies of it if you wish. This series of blessings was given by the Master Jesus, the cosmic avatar from Venus, through Dr. King in the late 50s as a cosmic transmission. So he would enter into a high state of trance, and the Master Jesus would, as it were, speak through him. Now, an interesting comment he made, and I'm paraphrasing, I may get it slightly wrong, but the gist of it was this, that anyone could do something like that. Anyone could get the 12 blessings or something similar from a great avatar like Jesus. All it takes, he said, was a few hundred lives of selfless service. Now, most of us have not done a few hundred lives of selfless service, which is why we can't do it. It's not that Dr. King was chosen on a whim or because of some strange mythical god pointing him out for no apparent reason. It's because of the effort that he had put in prior to his birth. It's because of his true stature, spiritual stature, obtained through effort. And this is something that anyone can do. These kind of great miracles that you hear that avatars have performed, like Jesus feeding the 5,000, these are something we can all do if we put the effort in. But that effort has to be expended on an extremely dedicated basis for life upon life upon life.
Well, many traditions around the world, Mark, are claiming right now that now is the time of a great acceleration of planetary human evolution, and that pretty soon a lot of us are going to be able to evolve much quicker than we have, you know, at any time, and be able to actually develop these kind of abilities. Is that a belief within your organization?
Yes, broadly speaking, yes. I mean, I think that time has already come. For example, I mentioned the spiritual pushes, where the karmic potency of actions is increased by a factor of 3,000. Now, that means that during those times, those people who act unselfishly will evolve 3,000 times quicker in that particular respect. And these started, the spiritual pushes started in the 50s and are continuing into the future. We have, at the moment, we believe, through the Theosophical Society, we don't think it's the only way, of course, but we think it's a very unique way, and we think that the information given through Dr. King, through the Theosophical Society, is of a unique caliber and gives us opportunities that we've never had before. For example, those dedicated members of the Aetherius Society who earn the privilege of taking part in Operation Sunbeam, which I mentioned earlier, where energy is given to the Earth. Now, if you're part of a great thing like that, which all members are to some extent, but particularly if you're in that inner core actually making it happen, so to speak, then you're going to advance much more quickly. Now, the way that advancement manifests may not be what you're expecting. The reward, if that's the right word, for being of great service is the ability to be of greater service. That is the greatest reward for service. That reward will come in the way that it's needed. Now, for some people, particularly in the future, it may be that developing great mediumistic abilities with higher beings is what is required, is what is needed on Earth to help people upon Earth. But it may be, at present, that that good karma may come in another form. It may give you better health, better intelligence, better ability at driving a car or driving a boat. We use a boat in one of these cosmic missions that we perform in conjunction with extraterrestrial beings. It may come in all kinds of ways. It's very hard to be specific about it, but it will come in the right way. This is the great thing about the divine law of karma, is that whatever lessons we need, whatever opportunities we need, will be given to us in the right way at the right time. And psychic abilities, great though they are, and they are the destiny of all of us, they may not manifest at the time when we think they ought to or in the way that we think they ought to.
Well, you mentioned at the beginning of our interview here, Mark, that that you were initially a bit skeptical when you got involved with the Aetherius Society. We're making these amazing claims, but then you had some experiences that made you a believer. Can you comment on that?
Yes, certainly. I think really that anyone who comes across the Aetherius Society, any normal person, is going to find it quite hard to accept a lot of our teachings. I think the only people who could come in cold and accept it right away would either be very advanced people indeed, or people who didn't really understand it and who didn't last very long in terms of following the Aetherius Society's teachings. It does take time, it does take effort, and it's worth every second of that effort, by the way. One of the first things that you experience in the Aetherius Society is the practice of dynamic prayer. This is when it's a world apart from just mumbling a few words that you don't understand. Dynamic prayer is when you act as a channel for spiritual energy, for light. You raise the hands facing outwards. You don't clasp them at your chest. The reason you raise them outwards is so that the heart chakra and the chakras in the palms of the hands are open, are free from obstruction, so to speak. During this, you visualize a white light flowing down through the head, filling the brain, through the shoulders, through the arms, out through the palms, out through the front of the heart chakra, which is in the sort of center of the chest area, just outside of the physical body. And you send, through the power of your visualization, streams of white light out to a particular destination. This might be a great being, like a great avatar, like the Master Jesus, or it might be a particular area of suffering, such as Haiti or Chile or Uganda at the moment. And this is something we can all do. It's very easy in a way. It's very simple to visualize this energy flowing through us, trying to keep a straight posture if we can, and then maybe to say some words out loud, and then to try and say them with real feeling, to request from the divine source or whatever it is you believe in, whatever positive spiritual power you believe is behind creation, to request from this power light to flow through you out to this focal point. And then visualizing the focal point, if it would be one of suffering, not as one of suffering, but as it should be, filled with light and spiritual evolution and joy. When you do this, you don't have to do it many times, and you don't even have to be fully convinced, in my experience anyway, that it's definitely going to work before you begin to feel the energy flowing through you. You have to be open-minded to it. I don't think it would work if someone was doing it just for a laugh, or to, because they wanted to prove that it didn't work and they didn't believe it at all, even as a possibility. I think you have to be open-minded. But if you are open-minded, this energy will start to flow through you with a little bit of practice, and you will feel it flowing through you. You will feel physical sensations within your aura reacting against your physical body. You will also feel tremendously inspired and uplifted yourself as a karmic reaction to what you've done, and also because you've had this light flowing through you, and it, as well as healing the focal point or helping the focal point, it will also purify you by virtue of its spiritual light essence. So when I started doing this, actually, I remember I was performing the 12 blessings. I was only about 15 at the time. And one of the first sensations I had was a strange kind of pressure in my solar plexus. And I thought, what's this? It wasn't like a stomachache. And it wasn't painful, but it was something that was very unfamiliar. And I was a little bit concerned about it, actually. I now understand that that was a reaction of this power going through me, stimulating actually a lower chakra, the solar plexus chakra, than the heart chakra. And this is something which since I've felt many times before. It wasn't that I wanted to feel this pressure. It never occurred to me I was going to feel a pressure in my solar plexus. I didn't know anything about the solar plexus chakra at the time. And when I feel tingling in the fingers or a certain warmth within the body as a result of doing this, it's not that I think I ought to feel this. Because I don't always feel it in the same way. I really do not think that it is psychosomatic, because when it started happening, it came as a surprise. And now when it happens in different ways, at different times, and even now, after many years of doing it, it sometimes takes me by surprise how it affects me. So that's one example. I think that's probably the easiest example to explain. Of why I find it impossible not to believe in the Aetherius Society.
Well, it seems to me some of the more outrageous claims that the Society makes relates to communicating with extraterrestrials. So my question is, how do you know that those lines of communication have been established with extraterrestrials? Have you had any kind of experience that would confirm that?
Well, the very fact that these teachings, which have given the kind of experience that I've described, come from these beings who claim to be extraterrestrial, leads me to believe that these claims are true. If you have a claim like this, such and such an intelligence is talking through Dr. King. This is a claim, right? Now, you could say, if you put into practice the teachings given by that intelligence, and they work for you in a way that you never dreamt possible, then it's not such a great leap of faith to assume that that intelligence is also telling the truth about where they come from. I can't prove to you over the phone that the Master Jesus is from Venus. But I can tell you that according to the claims made, this is what the Master Jesus has said through Dr. King. And also the Master Jesus has given through Dr. King the 12 blessings, through practice of which my life has changed. So I'm just putting two and two together, really. Dr. King used to, when he was asked this kind of question about himself, him being the man who was actually, of course, making the claims, he used to say, here we have great truth, great wisdom, fantastic insights into spirituality, the like of which the world has never seen before. Now, either these great teachings come from extraterrestrials as explained, or he, Dr. King, has invented them. And if he's invented them, then he's even more of a remarkable individual than just to be a channel for them. Because anyone who investigates these teachings, applies them, compares them with other teachings, concentrates on them, contemplates on them, meditates on them, anyone who does this cannot but come to the conclusion that they are true. I'm not talking about some kind of academic, dull, bookish analysis. Not that there's anything illogical about them, but such a cold approach will not yield much fruit. You have to try and live them. You don't have to be convinced before you do so, but you do have to be open-minded to the possibility that they're true. Then you analyze them, then you take them into yourself and live them, and then they will be proved to you in whatever way your own individual karmic experience pattern requires.
Well, you, being that you've got priests and bishops, do you have some kind of a mass or liturgy and is this based on the teachings that you received from the extraterrestrials?
We don't have a mass as such, no. liturgy, I'm a bit hazy on exactly what that is, but I believe it's just a spiritual practice regularly performed in services. Is that correct?
Well, it's not a mass, but it's a ritual.
Ritual,
and
yes.
There are certain things said within the ritual, which is, you know, makes it a liturgy.
Right. Well, we perform the 12 blessings, which I've mentioned, which is a ritual practice. Involves invoking and sending out light in the way that I've described, and contains 12 blessings to great spiritual workers, such as those who work for peace, which is the first blessing, or to great cosmic intelligences, such as the beings on other planets, or the Mother Earth, or the mighty Sun, or even the galaxy, which is an intelligence beyond our conception and its greatness. We also have certain visualization practices, which we perform regularly at our services. So there is certainly a ritual element. It's not ritual for ritual's sake. It's ritual which is performed in order to bring about a certain positive result in terms of the upliftment of consciousness upon Earth and the balancing of karma upon Earth.
So during your rituals, do you call upon the energies and powers and presence of the higher extraterrestrial beings to work through you all?
Not as such, no. For example, during an spiritual push service, though, which is during the first and last hour of one of those four periods I mentioned earlier when the Martian satellite is in orbit, we do make the effort to consciously be aware that when we're visualizing energy flowing through us, that it is being potentized by extraterrestrial forces. But we don't invoke the power of a particular master, cosmic master, from another world in our services. There may be certain exceptions to that, but as a general rule, definitely not, because we hold these beings in such high regard. To invoke the assistance directly of an ascended or cosmic master is quite a thing to do. Either it's not going to work, or if it does work, it's a big deal, because these are very, very significant intelligences. It's a bit like saying, would you phone the president to help you get your cat out of a tree? You know, no, you wouldn't, because, you know, the president should only be troubled about matters of national importance. It's a poor analogy, but I think it conveys the point that we're very wary how we ask these beings for help.
Well, when you're involved with your rites, are you at all conscious of working directly with these extraterrestrials? I understand it takes a long time to evolve to the degree that George King did, but don't members of your organization still have some sense, maybe some clairvoyant vision or auditory experience of these extraterrestrials?
Yes, this does happen. I can't authenticate any particular case, but it is certainly something that happens that we talk about anecdotally, where members do have certain visions, and I think probably all members would say that they believe that they have felt the presence of great beings at a Aetherius Society activities. Some may, you know, claim to have even seen a particular master. I remember actually we were running a spiritual retreat, and one person who wasn't even a member of the organization said that he had seen Dr. King twice, had two visions of Dr. King during that time. Now, I believe him, but I can't prove it. I can't swear to it because it's, you know, it's his word. But I don't find it hard to believe that someone with a natural proclivity towards psychic ability, which has been earned throughout their lives, of course, should have such an experience as this. One point I'd like to add to that, though, is that it is true that all great masters have gained and mastered psychic ability, but it is not true that all psychics are necessarily more advanced than all people who are not so psychic. Psychic ability is one manifestation of evolution, provided it's used in the correct way. But is not the only one. You may have someone, for example, who is a great musician, and that is their power that they've gained. That is their method of being of service, or a method that they can be of service, which may be more useful than someone else who is psychic and has certain clairvoyant experiences. So the musician who would not claim to be psychic may possibly be more advanced than the person who is psychic. It all boils down to service. This is the key message of the Cosmic Masters and the key message of the Aetherius Society. It's not how clairvoyant you are that matters. It's how much service you're performing. And there are some people who are very down-to-earth, ordinary people with many flaws and virtually or very little psychic ability who, because I think we all have some, who are performing great service. And you may have someone else who is in some ways much purer and may have more psychic ability who isn't performing so much service. And it is the latter person who is not as great as the former person. As Mars Sector 6, the cosmic master from Mars I mentioned earlier, said, serve and be great, nay, be everlasting. He actually said that service is greatness. And this is really the message that I'd like to convey to listeners, that this is something that we should all upon Earth embrace. It's common sense, and at the same time, it is the highest esoteric wisdom.
Well, it sounds to me, Mark, from talking to you now, that that perhaps your main vehicle for being a service on the planet is channeling energy from the higher realms, higher dimensions into this world. Is that your main vehicle, would you say?
Pretty much, yes. I'd say it's one of the main vehicles, let's say that. It's all about two things. Karmic manipulation, which is getting your karma right, trying to balance Earth karma, and about being a vehicle in some way for spiritual energy to help Earth or to honor higher beings, which will help us karmically. When we pray in a normal way, for example, sending healing to someone who is unwell, the energy is not from extraterrestrial beings per se. It may be potentized by extraterrestrial forces, possibly, depending on the time and the situation, but the energy is a universal thing. It's a natural energy that exists throughout the cosmos and is there to be used simply at our command, with or without the assistance of any higher being. Where we are dependent upon higher beings is we would not have the opportunity to evolve as we do were it not for the assistance and protection that we get from the cosmic and ascended masters. So we might not be in a position to pray at all, because we might be in the most dreadful state of involution, of primitive a low level of spirituality that we weren't even thinking about prayer at all, were it not for the inspiration and protection that these great beings are giving our world on an ongoing basis. But in terms of an individual prayer, the spirit of it is that it's from the divine source, not from an individual extraterrestrial intelligence.
Well, you mentioned that in your organization there's a series of initiations that the members go through. Does each one open you up more to that energy to make you more of an effective and efficient channel of it?
Well, to give you a really precise answer, I think it would be to say that it gives you the opportunity to be of greater service. Each initiation is about giving the individual the opportunity to be of greater service. This is likely, one of the manifestations of this is likely to be making you a better channel for spiritual energy to flow through you when you pray yes.
And so I assume that there are many of these initiations. Have you gone through a few of them?
There are. It's actually very complicated. There are various different aspects of the Aetherius Society, and there are initiations in those different aspects. I've described two aspects, which is the ecclesiastical and the temple degree order. Those people who are intimately involved in the performance of Operation Sunbeam, which I mentioned earlier, they would have arrived at that opportunity by virtue of a different set of initiations. So it's often quite hard within the organization to compare, you know, who is on a higher initiatory level to who, because some people may have attained a higher initiation in one regard but not so much in another. And there are, of course, certain people who've attained very high initiations across the board, but they're very few in number.
Is your organization integrated male-female?
Very much so, yes. There is no position that is not open to either gender. And actually, one of those bishops, I mentioned one of the two bishops consecrated by Dr. King, one of them is a woman and one is a man. So you have a perfect balance right there in terms of male-female.
If I remember right, reading over Dr. King's biography, wasn't he at certain times sent to certain energetic zones or hills where he could more easily communicate with the extraterrestrials?
In the late 50s and early 60s, he was instructed to climb certain mountains around the world, of which there are now 19, and make them holy by virtue of being a channel for spiritual energy to flow through him into those mountains. Now, 17 of those mountains, 17 of the 19, he climbed, and he was a channel for energy from one or more either cosmic or ascended master to put their energy through him into the mountain, making it holy. There's one other mountain which he himself charged. He invoked spiritual energy and acted as a channel for spiritual energy himself without the energy being put through him by another being. And there is one other mountain which he did not climb, which was charged directly by ascended masters. Members of the Aetherius Society climb these mountains when it's safe to do so. And when you perform a practice such as the 12 blessings or any bona fide spiritual practice on these mountains, the practice of this is greatly potentized. And this is another example of the experience, kind of experience that is quite common to members of the Aetherius Society. Praying is one thing, but praying on a holy mountain is quite something else. I remember on one occasion I was on one of the holy mountains called Penny Fan, which is actually in Wales in the United Kingdom. And it was as if my forearms and sort of just above my elbow as well, almost as if they turned to stone. They didn't feel like part of me in a normal way. And I could just, it was like the whole arm was just scintillating with spiritual energy. When I say turned to stone, I mean there was kind of a coldness. And it was like, almost like they weren't part of me. And yet they still were. It's a very difficult thing to describe. And then when I began to pray using one of the prayers from the 12 blessings, energy was gushing through me, and it was almost more than I could cope with. And it was the most tremendously inspiring experience, which has stayed with me. So this is one of the uses of the Holy Mountains, where we climb them and we send out power to the world in a more potent way than if we were not on one of these Holy Mountains.
Well, do we have any of those Holy Mountains here in the United States?
Absolutely, you do. Thank you very much for asking. There are several in the United States, and I have a list right here. Sadly, I've never actually climbed any of them in the United States, but I hope to one day. They are Mount Baldy in the San Antonio mountain range in Southern California, which is quite easy to get to from Los Angeles, I understand. There's Mount Talak in the Sierra Nevada mountain range, Northern California. There's Mount Adams in the Presidential Range in New Hampshire. And there is Castle Peak in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, which is near Aspen. And I would stress that, you know, these mountains should only be climbed when it's safe to do so. And please feel free to get in touch with us to seek guidance on that. We have 9 mountains in the British Isles. We have one in France, the sort of French-Swiss border. One in Africa, Mount Kilimanjaro. 2 in Australia and 1 in New Zealand. Because I know you have listeners all around the world.
Well, if my memory serves me correct, didn't George King have some kind of contact with Jesus on one of these mountains, where he actually arrived in, I guess, a spaceship and actually interacted with George in a physical body?
Yes, you've certainly been doing your research well, Mark. This is how the charging of the Holy Mountains began. I say charging them with spiritual energy. It was in July 1958, having received instruction from cosmic sources, Dr. King climbed a very small mountain, more like a hill, really, in Devon, in southwest England, and he was praying in a very intense yogic way on this mountain. It was nighttime, for peace in a certain part of the world. And the Master Jesus appeared from the sky to him, stood there physically on the mountain, and he sent a charge of spiritual energy through Dr. King, which resulted in this mountain becoming forever holy. And this mountain is Holdstone Down, and we climb this mountain pretty much every year in July to honor this occasion. And there was one year, a couple of years ago, I think, when we did something we hadn't done before, which was we dedicated one day of our pilgrimage to this mountain to sending spiritual energy not to the world as we normally do, but to the extraterrestrial beings themselves in praise and appreciation of all that they've done for us. They don't ask this of us, by the way. They don't require it of us, but it's good for us to do it. It helps balance our karma, and it shows gratitude in a very powerful way. And when we did this, there were about 135 of us, I think, up there, so not a huge number. We chanted mantra, we sent out prayers, we did a lot of visualizations, we arranged ourselves in certain shapes even, which are of special spiritual potency. Within hours of this, unbeknown to us, there was a record number of UFO sightings seen around the UK, 200 on that evening. And this, we didn't even know about it till a couple of days later. It was in the press, the local press, and even the national press. And Richard Lawrence, our executive secretary in the UK, did scores of radio interviews about this, because you know, even people within the UFO community, so to speak, couldn't begin to explain this. And here we had a very plausible, or let's say very interesting piece of synchronicity, to say the least. This has surprised many people, including many people within the Aetherius Society. I myself never dreamt that we'd have a kind of response like that. I'm not saying that all those 200 sightings were necessarily genuine, but it is an extraordinary thing that there should be so many on that very day.
Well, are you aware of the, I believe it's called the Rama organization? I believe it was founded by a man named Sixto Paz down in Peru. It sounds very similar to what you all are doing. Apparently, they use alchemy and yoga to evolve themselves, open themselves up so that they can make direct contact with extraterrestrials. And apparently, Sixto Paz was able to summon a huge craft that kind of flew over a place called Markawasi, so that, you know, that everyone could see that, you know, he did have that power. So I was wondering if you knew anything about them, or if you had studied their teachings at all.
It sounds fascinating, but I must confess that I have not heard of them, but I will look into it. It all sounds possible to me. There are many claims out there, and many of them are possible, and some of them may be genuine. I just don't know.
Well, is there any long-term goal that you have for yourself in this organization? Do you desire to move up and become, let's say, a bishop ultimately, or you're just kind of going with the flow and seeing where your destiny leads you?
Well, I mean, the hope that I have, and the hope that I think that all members in the Aetherius Society have, is that they can be of greater service, can be more helpful to the world through this organization. And in whatever way the divine would have us be of service. So I just hope that, you know, I progress spiritually in whatever way is right for my level of evolution. I don't know what the future holds. I'll just try and, you know, keep on at it, as it were. Because it's, you know, it's very rewarding, but it's not always easy. It's hard work. One gets tests. This is what makes it all so worthwhile in many ways. You know, if it were easy, then, you know, you don't get anything really worthwhile that's easy in life, I don't think. Things might be simple, but they're not always easy. Like prayer is very simple. Unselfishness is very simple, but it can be very difficult. And I think it would be foolhardy of me to express any kind of specific ambitions in that regard, other than to say that I hope to help spread this wonderful message of hope for the world, of truth, of cosmic perspective, and to do the very best I can to help the world in all ways through the grace of the wonderful opportunities that we've been given by the Cosmic Masters.
Well, I certainly appreciate you coming on today, and you certainly presented yourself very articulately. I can't even say the word. I guess I'm not very
good. Very kind.
But you've done very well, and I really appreciate that. And I totally agree with you that service is the way. I used to have a teacher, he called it the Stairway to Heaven service.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more.
Well, good luck with your work, and maybe we'll cross paths sometime along the way in the near future, who knows, and maybe have you back on again and talk some more about this. It's all very fascinating.
That'd be great. I've really enjoyed being on the show. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you, and take care. Just to finish up on the show today, I wanted to remind people about our pilgrimage to France in September. Myself and my good friend Nancy Safford, who's a High Priestess of the Magdalene Mysteries. We're both Knights Templars, by the way, and we're going to be leading a tour into the Rennes-le-Château area, southern France, and into northern Spain, covering the places associated with the Holy Grail and the Knights Templar, Montségur, Rennes-le-Château, Montserrat, Sainte-Marie de la Mer, all these kind of places. And so it should be quite an exciting time. We're going, we'll be there during the equinox and the full moon and have lots of rituals and even connect up with Henry Lincoln, who lives down there, one of the co-authors of Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and hopefully connect up with Men Hammett, the tomb man who discovered the cave that he believes holds the mummy of Mary Magdalene. So it's going to be quite an exciting time. And if you'd like to know more and register for that tour, you can go to www.sacredsitesjourneys.com. And next week, we have a spiritual archaeologist, I guess you could call him that. Klaus Dohna is his name. He's been a museum curator for many years. And he got involved with more spiritual archaeology because he was involved with certain exhibitions where there were these artifacts that couldn't be explained. And he ended up calling them uparts, I guess. And then he actually brought together all these uparts, and he's gone to different cities around the world displaying these things, and there's no explanation for them. They shouldn't exist, basically. I mean, there's images of planes, for example, that come out of Babylonia, or and right now he's working on giants, and people are sending him these massive giant bones, and he's going to apparently he's going to Bolivia to check out one skeleton found there of a 20-foot tall human skeleton. So we're going to be talking about all that next week. It should be quite fascinating. So have a great week, and until we meet again, always remember that the true Holy Grail is always right inside of you. Bye for now.